All right, Mr. Barker. The Toronto Blue Jays losing 3-2 to the New York Mets in the first game of this three-game series at the Rogers Center. It is Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. This is Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. The numbers to call, as always, 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. If you want to send us a text, please do so at 590-590. Name and location, please. We have a lot to talk about out of this game. We've also got a lot to talk about today. Bo Bichette's comments to Shai Davidi making a lot of news. If you want to weigh in on that, feel free to talk about that with us, as well as this game. And Kevin Barker, interesting, I know that Ben Shulman made this point. At one point in the game, there were more hit batters than actual hits in the game. And I guess it's kind of fitting in a way that the Blue Jays would end up losing this game on a pass ball and with pass balls and wild pitchers coming into play, because it really was that type of game, wasn't it?
Yeah, look, I think a team that's got a top six payroll running out Tommy Nance in the eighth inning up a run facing the Mets with 18 games left. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, you've been saying this on our show forever. You know, they basically punted halfway through the season on the bullpen. I mean, nothing against Tommy Nance. I mean, he's doing his best.
He's had a good September so far.
Absolutely, but he's pitching the eighth inning up a run against the Mets at home with a top six payroll. There was other reasons, right? The top three guys in the lineup, Springer, Varsho, Vladdy, 0 for 11, six punchies. Then you have the bad eighth inning, right? You got the lead. You need to play good defense. I mean, they had some bad luck on the swing and bunt. I mean, the first pitch, the first batter of the eighth inning, Tommy walks. Like, it's just little things like that that, yeah. You understand why they're where they're at because of what they've done to their season. But, Jeff, I mean, it's like Tommy Nance in the eighth inning against the Mets at home with 18 games left of the season with a top six payroll.
I mean, everybody, you know, everybody's auditioning for jobs. That's why you saw
Tommy Nance is auditioning for a job next year?
He sure is. Absolutely he is. I mean, we spent all the time talking about how much they need to overhaul their bullpen. I don't think there's,
See what the Mets run out there? What the Blue Jays run out there?
Yeah. Well, but unlike the Blue Jays, though, the Mets, the Mets have spent their time adding guys with stuff. You know, they've added guys like Ryan Stanek. They've acted like a team that, seriously intended to be in the playoffs. Whereas we've talked about this, I think this, it's no surprise. I just think that based on how this team reacted to not having Garcia and Romano for the longest time, I mean, this gets to what you always talk about with a sense of urgency. I certainly didn't see it this year. But, Tommy Nance, maybe Tommy Nance factors in next year. I don't know. As Dan Shulman has said, this month is a fact-finding mission. And if as part of that fact-finding you find out that Tommy Nance isn't good enough to pitch in leverage situations, then you've found something out. I don't know what else to tell you. I do have a problem. You know, eighth inning, eight-hitter. A 3-2 curve.
His best pitch.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Best pitch.
Well,
to a lefty. They're hitting 100 off his curveball. Like, if you want to come out and say that he is trying to make a team next year, you want to get beat by your best pitch. His best pitch is breaking ball. It's a pitch hitting lefty.
No, 3-2, like, If your fastball isn't good enough to use it in that situation, and you're throwing a feel pitch, we're finding this out about.
I mean,
about
it,
these
it,
guys.
It is pretty alarming though that three dudes like a Stanek, like a Diaz, like a McGill can work through this lineup pretty easy with a fastball. Like, I think that if you want to point your finger at one thing that needs to be fixed sooner than later, it's getting a lineup that consistently can hammer the good old number one. Like, that doesn't change. Like, you can have great approaches and sit certain pitches in certain counts. I mean, for us to take this lineup and this team and this organization going into the offseason and into next season serious and wanting to make another run at this thing, they got to figure out how to consistently hammer fastballs. One thing, get a team out with breaking balls. Most dudes don't make a living off hitting the breaking ball, but you better figure out how to hit the heater. And consistently, you saw three dudes. Now, they had the heater, and they were locating it somewhat, but it was pretty easy per at bat to walk through that lineup pretty much with, you know, one pitch. Maybe a couple of them were headed in opposite directions, but still the good old number one. And that's the one thing I think is, you know, whatever their pitching is, whatever their pitching is. But the lineup consistently all year has had the one problem. What is it, Jeff? It's hitting the fastball.
The fastball. The Jays, by the way, are 5-8 in this run of games against teams that are on the cusp of the playoffs. You want to include the Boston Red Sox in that mix. And we are, I've said this time and again, and I will continue to say it. These games are showing just how much work the Blue Jays have to do to be a playoff team.
Well said.
And, you know, I look at the Mets. I don't think anybody's forecasting the Mets are going to win the World Series. The Braves, they're a playoff team. I don't think anybody's saying they're going to win a World Series. Like, this team is far away from contending for a playoff spot, let alone being a team that you might fancy, you know, winning the World Series.
Yeah, like, but
there's just a lot of work.
There was some good things. Bird was good. Frias was good. Yarbrough, you know, basically doesn't pitch. He was good.
Yeah, I got to tell you that. You know what? I don't know if they'd – I want to see Ryan Yarbrough back here next year.
I mean, I'm sure it would depend on how much he cost and what they get and what they don't get. And yeah, but me too. I mean, for a dude to not pitch the 10 games between or 10 days between one outing and then 8 days between this outing and come out and look the way he looked against the – you know, a playoff team. Oh, look, that's...
You know what he gives me? It's not one of your favorite words. And, yes, I understand. I don't want to pay him $14 million a year. But and I'm exaggerating how much he'd want. He gives me predictability.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a little trickery. Because of his height, he's 6'6".
The at-bats...
Got deception with the three-quarter arm slot.
The at-bats...
run with the fastball way to the righty, into the lefty. I mean, that's, you know, he's got the big slow breaking ball. He can throw the back foot slider. Like, he's got some things to get dudes out. You saw Lindor with the little smile, like, I can't hit you. Like, that's a good hitter who's having some frustrations with a guy that, quite frankly, probably shouldn't have that with. And, yeah, I'm with you. Again, it's not my first choice, but why not?
Shane in Mississauga, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
Howdy, fellas. I'm just curious Shane. What you feel about keeping Schneider in again in the ninth inning when we had an actual winnable game going on. In my opinion, I love him, what he did last year. He's going to be the answer to trivia questions and everything. That's fantastic. But if he wants to continue having a role on the team, he's not even mashing lefties. He's got to go back down to AAA. Somebody like Rodon should have been up in his place already. The guy got player of the month, rookie, or in the minor leagues for August or September. I can't remember which, but he would have been a better option to be throwing out there right now than Schneider. Just his whole downfall this year is a huge hole in his swing. He can't hit the heater. He's not picking up the breaking balls. So I just wanted to hear what you guys had to say about that.
Yeah, listen, you know, I've given up on what it is with Davis Schneider. Somebody really likes him in this organization. You know, if this was a team that was playing for anything this year, I'd be a little more worked up than I am. But I do wonder. You know, I look at Nathan Lucas. Nathan Lucas has been in this organization forever. And they've bypassed him. They've brought guys in from other organizations. They've traded for guys. I mean, my God, he was like basically the last guy in Buffalo called up here, I guess, other than Alan Rodon. And, you know, he looks like a guy who can handle the bat. I don't know why he wasn't up here earlier. I don't know why Davis Schneider is still getting plate appearances. Never mind being able to hit left-handed pitching. He's just an easy out.
Okay, whenever we had John on, I asked that. Why wouldn't you send him down, let him catch his breath, exhale, not have every at-bat be the seventh, you know, game of the World Series, and you're chasing hits at this level, and it sounds to me like they've given him adjustments to make, and he's trying to learn how to make those adjustments here, and they're going to give him an opportunity to do it. So that's John Schneider saying that. That's not me. I would assume that we take his word and believe that, you know, they have more faith right now in Davis than a lot of people that watch his at-bats on an everyday basis. So you pull for him, you root for him. I mean, if they're going to leave him up here, hopefully he gets out of this. Hopefully he has a little bit of momentum and can run into the offseason. You know, we talk about
that. It's too late for that.
It's the Mendoza line, right?
It's too late for that.
There's certain goals that you set for yourself. Now it's about getting above 200.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost at the point with this guy where I think the best thing they can do for him is, you know, I don't know, but sending a guy down to AAA with 2 weeks left in the season is kind of a slap in the face. I think I'll probably do with what John Schneider's doing right now. And just he's like my last option on the bench. That's the way I would look at him. I don't know how much is accomplished by sending him down to AAA.
Yeah, I don't think you can leave him in the big leagues. Ask him to make adjustments. I see sometimes you see his leg kick to his ear, sometimes you don't. Like tonight it wasn't. Like he saw a dude throwing harder, he made an adjustment. That's obviously coming from the 19 hitting coaches they got. It's a group effort of trying to get him on the same page and have some productive at-bats, and it doesn't have to be a positive outcome. Like they're just looking at him different than everybody else is.
Of course. Well, yeah, I mean, they quite often do that. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Look, by now it's obvious that they're seeing something we're not seeing, or we're not seeing something that they're seeing, or we're seeing something they're not seeing, or whatever. It's just obvious. And, you know, I just don't think I don't think we can figure out a lot of the evaluations this front office makes. I really don't. And my sense is I'm probably not the only one. Mark in Panama. You're kidding me. Welcome to Blue Jays Talk. Like, are we talking Panama, Panama? Are we talking Panama, Panama, or like Panama City? Or
no, Panama, Panama City, Panama.
Wow.
I'm moving around, doing some business. I'm actually down here looking for catchers that don't sit on one knee. That's it.
You want to talk about Brian Servin?
Yeah. I was disappointed. You know, like everybody said, Martinez said, they said after the game, the guys after the game, that, you know, when it was runners on third base, you can't move on one knee. And that's the story. I mean, you gotta teach the guy that. You got to get back to regular position so you can move laterally.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mark. Stay safe and travel safely. You know, look, this is the thing, though. And Buck has talked about this, and Buck is certainly way more of an expert than I think we are, Kevin. But there's such an emphasis on stealing strikes low in the zone and pitch framing and all that good stuff that essentially you have to sacrifice something. And what gets sacrificed in a lot of cases, the ability to block the ball. And
pass balls with runner on third don't happen a lot. That's why they don't change.
Yeah, actually, that's
real simple.
Yep.
Stealing strikes, tricking the umpire works more times than a pass ball with a runner on third or a wild pitch with a runner on third. That's why they don't change. Yeah. We can yell and scream and not like it. They're tricking more than they have to worry about blocking and pass balls and runners on third. So.
Yeah, and don't forget, that's also, you know, stealing the low strike and pitch framing and all that. You get paid for that now. You get paid for that as a catcher. That's, you know, one of the reasons that one of the pushbacks against the automated strike zone is that, you know, there's a whole class of players in baseball who depend on that skill to get paid. Ask Alejandro Kirk how important that is. Alejandro Kirk wouldn't have survived last year if it wasn't for his ability to frame pitches.
I don't believe you.
What?
That he wouldn't have survived.
It certainly wasn't his offense last year that was getting him in. It was his. What's his strength always been? His ability to frame pitches.
Hi.
Lee and Caledon, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
How are you guys? You guys are amazing. Love you guys. I just wanted to talk about Bo Bichette because I didn't get a chance to actually look. I just heard it from the front of the broadcast there that you guys said. Just wanted to find out like what he said and if that impacts any of the players that he might say in the media or himself when he says comments like that.
Yeah, I mean, well, what he said was, in an interview with Shai Davidi today, that he wants to stay here, he wants to win here, he wants to win with Vladdy. You know, at the end of the day, what does it mean? I guess it's nice that Bo is happy here. That's one thing, I guess, one thing we can check off when he does return here this year. I don't think it matters a tinker's damn, to be honest.
What is that?
You know, it's, I mean, Vladdy's wanted to sign here for 4 years.
Yep.
They haven't talked to him about signing here for 4 years. Bo coming out and saying that I want to stay here. I don't think it'll resonate with the front office at all. They've made their minds up. I truly believe this. They've made their minds up on Bo and Vladdy. We may not know what it is. It may not be the road that we think it is. In other words, you know, we're sitting here saying, well, they haven't had any serious discussions with Vladdy, therefore they don't want him to sign. I said today, maybe Mark Shapiro knows the money's there and he doesn't feel any need to get around to negotiating until this offseason or early in the season. That's entirely possible. But that was sort of the gist of the story. And, you know, as I said, yeah, it removes a little bit of a talking point when Bo does return. We're led to believe that'll be next Monday, that he'll finish out the final 2 weeks of the regular season with the team. It removes that narrative from the picture. But beyond that, I don't, like I said, I don't think it really makes a difference one way or another. Do I think the chances of Bo signing today, or do I think the chances of Bo signing are any better after what he said? No. Do I think they're any worse after what he said? No. Do I think the chances of him being traded are greater after what he said? No. Do I think the chances of him being traded are less after what he said? No. I just don't think it's had an impact one way or another.
It seems like it made Bo feel better. Like
which is good.
He felt like he needed to come out and say what he said. And, you know, any bearing or feelings towards other players, I don't think other players care. As long as he's not mentioning their name. I mean, he said all great things about Vladdy, which he wouldn't. I mean, Vladdy's had him a tremendous 4 months.
Yeah, speaking of Vladdy, he did foul a ball off. And now it looked to us like he fouled it off his shin guard. Apparently, he was x-rayed for... a broken foot or toe, they were negative. Now, we did see a shot in the dugout where Bo was walking down, and he looked really pissed off, walking down into the clubhouse.
You mean Vladdy?
Or Vladdy, walking down into the clubhouse with Jose Mistral.
Well, he took his next at-bat, so he seemed to be...
He was limping, though, during that at-bat. So we can assume that he went down and had x-rays taken, and the x-rays were fine, and he came back up and stayed in the game. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590-32. The New York Mets have beaten the Blue Jays in the first of this three-game series at the Rogers Center. The Jays are now 68-77. Game two of this series goes tomorrow at 7:07. Let's step away, come back, maybe even hear from the skipper. It's Blue Jays talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
In the eighth inning, you guys have just taken the lead, and then they end up kind of coming back. What was your read on how that Mets rally unfolded?
Leadoff walks are never great, you know, and then errors don't help either. You know, I think that if Ernie could have that back, he probably just eats that ball. And, you know, kind of shot ourselves in the foot between wild pitches, pass balls, things like that. I thought Tommy threw the ball okay. A little bit erratic for him, but we kind of just didn't really help ourselves there. And when you get down to it's, you know, you talk about it. Talked about it yesterday, today. You're playing teams like this that are, you know, fighting for every single thing. You got to play clean, and you know, it's two nights in a row we did not.
That is John Schneider, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, talking about how the eighth inning unfolded in tonight's 3-2 loss to the New York Mets, coupled with, you know, what we've seen, or what we saw, I should say, yesterday in Addison Barger error contributing to an Atlanta Braves win, and, you know, the final play of the game, ball hit to Spencer Horwitz. I thought that was a difficult play for Spencer Horwitz to make yesterday.
Just don't throw it.
Yeah.
That's what John's talking about.
Yeah, but and then, of course, we saw with Ernie Clement today. You know, look, one of the things we are going to find out, there are a lot of guys who are getting more consistent playing time than they've received in the past. And, you know, Kevin, let's see how they hold up under that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, how many of these dudes that are playing every day now are going to be everyday players come
March 30th of next year. I mean,
well, you hope not many, to be honest.
Well, there you go. Like, you know, there's going to be some lefties that are having some quality at bats and are probably going to be a part of your team. But if this is the team you're going to run out there March 31st of next year,
416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. With the win tonight, the New York Mets have moved a game ahead of the Atlanta Braves in the National League wild card race. The Mets are 79-65. They currently hold down the third wild card spot. They are a game back of the Arizona Diamondbacks and 1.5 back of the San Diego Padres, who hold down the top spot. It is a very good race. The Braves are a game back, as we said. They lost 1-0 to the Cincinnati Reds tonight. So, as is quite often the case at this time of the year, teams that are out of the race playing spoiler. And you can rest assured that in Atlanta, they're watching the results of this game just as the Mets are watching the results of any games involving the Braves. The Jays did have the tying run on first base with two out in the ninth inning, and Leo Jimenez hit a fly ball to right field that...
Take a girl man to go over there.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a long way over there.
It was titillating for about a little bit. And
most of the time, the outfielder lets you know how far it's going.
And Starling Marte did not look like he was...
Worried.
That would probably be the best way to put it. Colin in Manitoba, you're on Blue Jays Talk. Whereabouts in Manitoba are you?
Just out by Beausejour, east of Winnipeg.
There you go. Welcome.
Hey, long-time listener. I just had a comment about Bichette there. I kind of think what's happened here with his comments is that his agent has probably pulled him aside and said, look, in the public right now, you look like a pouting suck, you know. You're going to knock $5 million off your next contract if people think you're a bad attitude in the clubhouse. I have a feeling that he's just come clean and, you know, someone's had a pep talk with him and said, listen, regardless whether you want to be here or not right now, you're hurting your value. The minute you look like a poor teammate or a bad guy in the clubhouse, I know that doesn't go far anymore. Like, I'm just saying, like, you know, you hear it mentioned over and over again. I have a feeling that, you know, his agent or maybe his dad or someone has pulled him aside and said, listen, you know, quit the pout. You know, you're hurting your ability to go forward with a contract.
Yeah.
You know, and I can see that happening. And another thing I wanted to bring up was the Jays' ability to pivot. Like, we could learn such a lesson from the Tampa Bay Rays. We sit on our young guys till they're, you know, 25, 26. We hardly give them a sniff until the season blows apart, and it had to completely blow apart before we give them any kind of look. You know, that wouldn't happen in Tampa. Like, you could have a guy like Varsho right now, where the league seems to love that he can catch the ball even though he can't hit. Move him while he's hot. You know, we move someone when they got no value. We don't bring someone in until we desperately have to. Like, watching Kiermaier the last 2 months, he shouldn't have been in the lineup the last 2 months. He should have been moved long before that. When the season was done, it's time to see what we got. It's time to see some youth. Like, I didn't mind losing tonight. It was fun. I didn't mind losing to the Phillies. You know, we went toe-to-toe with the Phillies with a bunch of young kids. So, and it's the same when they had Mitch White a couple of years back or last year, whenever the hell they had him. They hung on to him because they were so scared someone else would get him. Meanwhile, nobody wanted him. You know, it's the same with what's his name that went to L.A., the second baseman. Ugh.
Biggio, yeah. You know, who's now with Atlanta.
By the time he left, he went to L.A., you know, like, we hang on to these guys till they virtually have no value. I think we got to start looking a little bit on Tampa side of thing. Like, if I was in charge of this the next year, I'm moving Varsho right now. You know, he's shown that he doesn't hit well. You know, but he's got good defensive prowess. He'll probably get a gold glove this year. Move him while you got something for him. You know, same with a guy like Kirk. You know, he's a liability on the base pass. Yeah, he's hitting good on the second half under no pressure. You know, like, what about moving some of these guys while they have value? Instead, we always wait, even back to the Donaldson days, the Batista days, we wait till they're worn right out and worth nothing.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think it's a management problem that I don't know if they're spoiled because Tampa has to think that way. And like you said the other night, Milwaukee's got to think that way. you know, there's got to be accountability for having absolutely no originality.
I appreciate the call. Here's the thing. This organization doesn't move quickly. You have to be nimble in order to pivot. This organization looks at everything as being answerable through a process. And I think that is part of the problem with this team. You know, Buck made an interesting point the other night. I'm not carrying water for Nathan Lucas. I really don't care if he's here next year or not, to be honest. I truly don't.
Be nice.
Well, no, I don't. But here's the thing. You know, I've watched him, and I keep asking myself, why did they bring Kevin Kiermaier back? Why didn't we have Nathan Lucas in left and Dalton Varsho in center and George Springer in right? Like, this is what I don't understand. And you know what? It wasn't the contract didn't break the bank. I get that. But it was, Kevin, I don't know where you stand. It was just kind of puzzling.
Run preventing. He's a better defender than Nathan Lucas is. That's why. They were a run-preventing team going into the season. You know that as well as anybody. That's why they brought him back. Yeah. Like, that doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out that they're
certain.
Sticking to that part of it.
I'm not entirely certain that they would have been a worse run-preventing team with Dalton Varsho in center field.
Well, you answered your own question. You know why they did that. Like, they're, other than Ohtani, there was no other impactful bat that they thought they could go out and get and that could come in here and hit behind Vladdy, in front of Vladdy, that could – carried the team for 3 weeks at a time.
But
that's why they went out and tried to piece it together with a 39-year-old Turner and a Kiermaier and a IKF that they already traded.
But this gets back to the caller's point, though. They didn't, as far as we know, I mean, they didn't make a serious attempt to trade to address their issues. And part of that is because the minor league system wasn't very deep. That's their fault. That's nobody else's fault but theirs. And
I think that for me, look on the outside looking in, I think they sometimes believe in their players a little bit more than other people do.
Well, you
and
know
I
what
think
else?
That's what gets them in trouble, especially on the everyday guys.
Yeah, and I'm going to say this, Kevin.
Just
I also
talent-wise, matching up against other good teams, just not there.
Right? I'm also going to say this. You know, I mean, believe people when they tell you who they are, and you tweaked onto this very early in the off season. There was so much talk about the hitting coaches and the new communication. They were all of this stuff. I think these guys honestly believe that their hitting coaches are capable of taking guys and turning them into really good hitters.
Yeah, whatever their model is, they believe in their model.
That's right.
They would never tell you what that model is.
Well, no,
but whatever it is, they really, really, really believe in it. And they think that the 19 hitting coaches they got can spread the word to guys that and make up for the deficiency that maybe the talent 1 through 9 they don't have. And for me, I just think sometimes the manager's got to write the names in there, and it's just better than the dude standing on the mound. And consistently all year, it's been one guy. How many times have you said, how many of the lineup guys would play on other good teams? And it's always the same answer.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
That's the dude who plays first. That just can't happen and think you're going to contend consistently against really good teams. Just not. Why do you think all these good teams go out and spend a Brinks truck worth of money on people? Because they have to, because they're more talented, and talented dudes cost tons of money.
Well, this
it's just the way it is.
The caller's point about Tampa Bay, though, the other thing that has to be said is the Tampa Bay Rays are used to living on a small payroll.
Yeah.
One of the things that happens when you have a large payroll is it allows you to cover your mistakes. Or it at least gives you false comfort that you can cover for your mistakes. And I think maybe part of the what we've seen here is poor payroll management by this front office. It's great that they went out and signed free agent pitchers. The free agent pitcher signings have by and large worked out.
Absolutely. Homer.
But they got to start spending some money on offense.
Yeah.
You know, they They really do.
Well, the times that it worked, the Orioles stunk. That's the problem, right? Yeah. And now next year, probably the Rays are going to be much better. Here comes the Red Sox, and the Yankees and the Orioles are going to be good for the next 100 years. That's what I said. Talent is going to have to try and match up against everybody else's talent.
Let's wrap it up with Dave in Huntsville. Dave.
Hey, guys. Kind of builds on the theme of what you've been talking about, I guess, for the last little bit here. And that relates to really Schneider and some of the decisions and also how that interplays with some of the other decisions in the front office. So I guess two-part question or two questions separate but related. And the first is, what's your sense of the degree of support or goodwill that Schneider has in the clubhouse? And if it's strong, or I guess perhaps if it's not, regardless of if what that answer is, do you think it's at all likely that we might see some of the players start to vocalize how they feel in the event that their support is there? Because that may help prevent Schneider becoming a sacrificial lamb and might force the issue with a little bit more accountability upstairs. I don't think anybody's going to see anything negative, certainly about the people making decisions about their contracts and cutting the checks. But if they vocalize their support for their manager and indirectly say or imply that he's maybe not the problem in their eyes, I'm just wondering if you think that would be at all smart on their part, if we're likely to see it, and what that might bring about or not come November 1st. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kevin, I don't know how you feel about it. I've only really been in one situation where the players have made their point of view clear to the front office, and that was in Cito Gaston's the year Cito Gaston took over from John Gibbons, and the players basically revolted. And a final weekend of the season, a group of players, I believe it was Aaron Hill, Lyle Overbay, a couple of other guys. I mean, they had a meeting with Paul Beeston and Alex Anthopoulos to put their concerns out there. I just don't think that happens anymore.
Yeah, I think he's made when it comes to relating to John Schneider, I think he's made some adjustments when it comes to the rotation, how quickly he doesn't take a guy out, and the lineup. How would anybody in the lineup have any leg to stand on?
Well,
I mean, how many times have you ever heard John Schneider come out this year and be hard on somebody in the lineup?
Well, and the only thing the manager can do is control your playing time. And I look at that, you're going to have to find somebody in this team. I'm looking at guys. There's nobody in this team that can say John Schneider didn't give him a chance.
There you go.
I mean, good Lord.
So
everybody in this team has been given a chance by the manager. I think for most players, Kevin, I mean, you were a player. Isn't that the thing? Opportunity?
Absolutely.
That's the currency. That's what gets you paid. I can think I'm a great player. I can think I've got skills. But if you're not going to let me show it, it doesn't matter. So I don't think there's anybody in this team that can complain about John Schneider.
Yeah, I don't think you can judge John, in my mind, until he gets more 1-9 talent there.
Yeah. No, I'm with you completely on that. And that's probably a good thing, to be honest, because, I've said this. Is he the best manager I've ever covered? No. Is he the worst manager I've ever covered? No. I think he's done an acceptable job given what he's been presented with. I don't think anybody else would have done any better.
Some of them dudes in that lineup should throw him a party at the end of the season. How about that?
Yeah. Some guys are going to get jobs either with this team or with another organization because John Schneider's put their name in the lineup. 3-2, the New York Mets have beaten the Blue Jays. Game 2 of the series is tomorrow, 7:07. We'll be doing Blair and Barker from 4 to 6 Eastern tomorrow, as usual, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet. Thank you for listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Grand Falls and Miramichi, New Brunswick. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection.